ready to do this?
We're ready to fly over here at PMP
Network.
All right,
I'm set too.
Good. We're talking with Paul Peterson, of course. We all know him and love him as Jeff Stone on the Donna Reed Show. And he did that part from 1958 to 1966. And to many of us, still seems like yesterday.
You know, yeah,
sort of. Isn't it amazing how quickly time flies?
Well, that's a lot of years.
Well, there is a lot of years and a lot of stories involved as well, and a lot of books for you.
Well, that's true enough. That's true enough.
One thing I did not know about you, but I guess it's true, is that at one point you were a Mouseketeer?
Yes, I was one of the original 16 Mouseketeers back in 1955.
I never knew that.
Yep, it's true. In fact, I am the world's first ex-Mouseketeer because I was fired for conduct unbecoming a mouse.
Now, what kind of conduct would be unbecoming a mouse? Like letting a cat leave you alone? Or?
No, it had more to do with being 9 years old and, you know, a typical sort of all-American boy who just couldn't wait to investigate every part of the stage and the studio, you know, places like the paint department and swiping the cars that were newly designed for Tomorrowland's racetrack.
Wow. You know, as I'm speaking here about Mouseketeers, for some weird reason, now again, maybe it's because when I was a little kid, this was in my mind, but it just flashed in my mind. Today is a day that is filled with excitement. Nobody knows what's going to happen. You remember
that's
that song?
Right.
That was from, which day was that? I don't know.
I think that was Thursday. Because, you know, there were five theme days. And of course, one day was a sort of, like potluck. Anything could happen.
Yeah, that was what it was. Anything can happen day.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Isn't that amazing that it would pop in my head like now?
Well, all of us, I think, who grew up when television was new, are really, we are really able to connect with those images. There's so many things from back in the 50s and early 60s that I remember from television and movies. They were just indelible impressions.
Mm-hmm. That's weird. I mean, in this great job that I have, I get to speak to people who I grew up watching on TV.
Isn't that fun?
And it's kind of fun, and just kind of reliving those times for them is as well as usually a lot of fun, depending on the situation that they had when they were doing the show.
Well, generally it is. My only complaint about it is that it's endless. You know, people are constantly harking back to a certain time in life, which was really quite pleasant. Don't get me wrong. But it's like your parents asking you to watch home movies every Saturday for years.
Your TV sister was, of course, Shelley Fabre.
That's right.
Are you still
there? Later, my real little sister, Patricia, who played Tricia on the Donna Reed Show for the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah. That must have been tough.
No, it was really great. Frankly, I'm pretty sure that helped me focus my life because I was 18, Patty was 8. So I was her guardian on the set, and it really, it provided me a kind of discipline, which frankly I enjoyed. I loved Patty like crazy, and it was fun to actually be in charge of a young person.
How did you get along with Shelley?
Oh, great! She is a life friend, and when she signs a note to me, she puts number 3 because my 3 sisters are my sister Pam, my sister Patty, and my sister Shelley.
That's funny, huh? You went through a stage in life there when you were on that show where you had hit records.
Yes.
And a lot of real fancy cars and fancy women. It must have been, in some ways, a great time.
Oh, of course. It was great fun. Oh, my friend, there is nothing wrong with being rich and famous. I had a ball. I really did. The wonder of it to me is how I could have gotten so confused to think that it would last forever. I'm generally a fairly sensible person, but it's hard to ignore the blandishments of fame or success, at least as Hollywood defines it.
Well, back then there was really No, there's nothing that you could follow. There was no people telling you, hey, Paul, listen, you know, this isn't going to last forever. Here's what you got to do. Put this money away. Do this over here. And I think that's one of the reasons why a minor consideration that you created that organization for. In fact, many of the kid stars I've talked to these days say to me that it's a great idea that you're doing this because, and some of the people we talked to from the 60s and 70s shows said, I wish someone was around to do what Paul Peterson's been doing.
Well, that's of course our value, and while most people think that this means that we only care about kids in show business, you know, if you really think about it, you have to understand that these forces, this use or misuse of children early in their life, really goes across the board. The attack, that's too strong a word. The struggle that we're having with the entertainment business has a corollary in the regular business world. I must tell you, for a lot of us in the minor consideration, we understand the plight of a 13-year-old seamstress chained to a sewing table in Indonesia just as well as we understand Gary Coleman.
Right. You know, well, I just want to talk a little bit about your own experiences because I find the whole thing fascinating. You were on that show from age 12 to 20.
That's right.
You grew up, you went through puberty on the show.
That's right.
I mean, that's the most awkward time in your life, and you did it on national TV.
Well, you know, there were only a couple of moments that stand out, at least looking back. You know, I'm going to be 55 on the 23rd of this month. And
happy
when
birthday.
I look back, I remember two things distinctly that were embarrassing. The first was when my voice changed. You know, I had always been the boy soprano and really a quality voice, well-trained, and that made me nuts to hear my voice crack because I knew 33 million people were going to be witness to that awkward moment.
Sure.
The other one was the moment when we did a show called The First Shave. I was not yet shaving. This was, early in my 15th year. And Andy McCullough wrote a script about the first shave. And I had to do that in front of all of America. And you know how boys are about, you know, when you're just in puberty and body hair and, you know, all those things are just, you're so sensitive about
mm-hmm.
it. And I was mortified. But I learned a powerful lesson. In the scene where Carl Betts standing over my shoulder in the bathroom and I'm putting on shaving cream for the first time, I just couldn't do it. I have to tell you, the Paul Peterson inside me, inside the character Jeff Stone, rebelled. And Andy McCullough said, Paul, here's how you do the scene. And he suddenly started screaming my dialogue at the top of his lungs, threw himself on the floor. I mean, he had a fit. In front of everybody. And then suddenly he stopped and he stood up and he said, Paul, if you want to be a good actor, you must never be embarrassed. And here's the reason. The good joke or the most telling emotional point will be right at the heart of your embarrassment. And if you're too embarrassed to get there, you won't be a good actor. Hmm. It was a good lesson.
Yeah. The other lesson that you learned was when the show went off the air, you were 20 years old, and for a while, you were getting you were getting some jobs as well, but they began dwindling, and after a few years, there really wasn't anything out there.
Well, it was a linear descent into the toilet bowl. I have related this story many times. In the year after the Donna Reed Show, I worked 16 weeks, then the next year, 8 weeks, then the year after that, 4 weeks, and by 1969, 1970, I didn't work at all.
Mm.
And, of course, I was absolutely helpless to understand this until Mickey Rooney came to my house unannounced and sat me down on my own couch and said, look, Paul, I've been through this. You have got to get out of town, get your education, and maybe in 25 years they'll let you work again. Now, mind you, this is Mickey Rooney,
wow,
who still had not made his great comeback in Sugar Babies.
Right.
So it was amazing. That was kind of the first hint I had that former kid actors, no matter what their age or generation, have an inbuilt connection.
Yeah. Now, the minor consideration thing is something that I find amazing and so important for the 600 former kid stars and all the ones that are going to become former kid stars as well that are acting now.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that the reason it started, or the catalyst, was actually Rusty's passing.
Yes, Rusty Hamer. That's correct. There was actually... now, I'm talking about late 1989, January 1990. In the span of 3 months, three former kid stars that I knew and was well acquainted with took their lives. Trent Lehman, Tim Hovey, and then finally Rusty Hamer. And on the morning of Rusty Hamer's death, I looked at my wife and I said, this will never happen again. Wherever there's a former kid star in trouble, I'm going to show up. Because for me, and this is completely internal, I knew that each of those young men was in trouble. I knew it. I knew where they lived, and I had, frankly, the resources to help, but I didn't do it because I was too busy collecting the story instead of doing something about it.
Mm.
And that was a life change for me. And I must tell you, there are times in life when you, honest to God, feel a tap on your shoulder. And that morning, I got my tap on the shoulder. And it was as clear to me as anything could possibly be that I had a task had been given me. And I'm pleased to say here, 10 and a half years later, that we're making progress. We're not perfect, but we're certainly making progress.
You've certainly had some laws changed. You've made people aware. You've changed the way management of stars is. And all the things you're doing are positive.
Well, I think so. But, you know, one of the most important things we do is prevention. And we have made it possible for concerned stage parents or relatives or crew members or adult stars who are working with kids to call on us to allow us to help when they sense trouble, you know, when the instincts are suddenly warning, wait a second, I got a problem kid here. We're able to get there. And the most amazing thing, and you'll love this, is even a 10, 11, or 12-year-old kid actor who may be completely oblivious to our body of work still comes to understand that they belong to us, that we understand. We had stage parents. We've all had to sign autographs. We know what it feels like to be a kid and be famous.
Mm.
And that is a sense of family that is very rare.
I know your wife has been so important in helping it.
This couldn't have happened without her. We actually had, on that morning of Rusty Hamer's suicide, a very frank discussion because she understood how deeply I was affected by that. And we had to make a choice, and I just set my writing career off to the side and, without really knowing what I was doing, started off building this organization. And it's almost miraculous because where before, when I tried to discuss with people the issues surrounding kid actors, I guess my own alcoholism had made me very bitter and confrontational on these issues. And it wasn't until I stopped drinking that I became effective. Gee, there's a surprise. But that's because of minor consideration, and my friends within the group got me sober. And once I started reaching out for help, the doors were open to me. I couldn't believe it. People who wouldn't talk to me the previous year about the unique troubles of kid actors, suddenly after Rusty's suicide, were saying to me, how can we help? And I'm talking major industry institutions, the Actors Fund, the Motion Picture Relief Fund, even our own Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, Pension and Health Plan. Suddenly, they were willing to help. And it was such a gratifying experience that, you know, people like Wayne Newton stepping up to the plate and going bail for Dana Plato. Well, we didn't have the money to do that, and Wayne put $14,000 in cash on the police desk to release Dana from jail.
Hmm.
And that's how the community of former kid stars really started to knit itself together.
I'm glad you brought up Dana's name, because in January 1990, when a lot of this was happening, like Rusty's suicide, Dana was in Playboy at the time.
Absolutely.
Drew Barrymore was publishing an autobiography about her drug and alcohol, and Todd Bridges was on attempted murder charges. Danny Bonaducci lost his job. Gary Coleman was in the news. Jane North. all these people who we've by the way, had on our radio show. In fact, Dana Plato came on to promote a movie she made. It was like a softcore film called Different Strokes with another woman.
Yes,
and I said to her, you know, this is not where you should be.
No, and, well, that was always the struggle with Dana, is to get her to separate out her quote-unquote entertainment business life from reality.
Hmm.
And her reality was just desperate. She was uneducated. She had no employment skills. She had lost custody of the most precious thing God had given her in her life, namely her son Tyler.
Hmm.
And she was adrift. And it was so hard to get her to understand that reality, and frankly, she never did understand.
No, I know when you speak about trying to save people, there are some people who cannot and won't be saved.
That's true, but the difference with the minor consideration and anything else I know of is that we never give up. Look, we took Lisa Loring through 7 rehabs. 7.
Hmm.
Well, finally, the 7th time it took. You see, we don't ever give up. I will always answer the phone, and the group will always extend itself to a member of our gang, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
We had a member, in fact, we've had Lisa Loring on as well, who's very nice.
Oh, she's a wonderful gal.
But talking about your gang, we had on Dr. Russell, who, of course, has been on as Jeannie Russell, Margaret on Dennis the Menace.
Oh, she was absolutely critical in those early days and since, because, you know, Jeannie is the national chair of the Young Performers Committee.
Right.
I was much too confrontational to take on the role of chairman. I've gotten better, but... you know, Jeannie, of course, was very aware of Jay North's circumstances, and without her assistance and guidance and counsel, we would have never gotten this off the ground, because I am the bad cop in this. I mean, I don't mind taking the hits, and I give back a few hits as well.
Mm.
And it requires someone with Jeannie's wonderful, even temperament and ability to network, to make this work. Because nothing has changed. I was fired at age 9. I am a confrontational person.
No, well, you are. But, you know, on the other hand, you have also been there. All these places, when you talk to these kids about drugs and alcohol and bad influences, and, you know, you've been there. And you've
well,
got
I
out of
have.
It. And you know, Jay North, I guess, is another one that was kind of saved by you and Margaret and Margaret by Jeannie.
Funny how easily we use the character name.
Yes, isn't that terrible?
No, it's not terrible. You know, when I hear the name Jeff, I turn around. I do. It's an automatic reflex, because Jeff Stone is a part of me, and he'll always be a part of me. And as you might have heard Diana Sarah Carey say in that wonderful A&E special, you have to come to terms with that character that made you famous. You must.
Right.
Otherwise, what awaits you is the tragedy of a Rusty Hamer or Trent Lehman or Tim Hovey or Dana Plato.
Yeah, I think that Henry Winkler is a great example of someone who came to grips with the success they had in the character, went beyond it.
Oh, he is such a special man.
Yeah.
I'm honest, Injun, you know, there are very few people that I can truly say I have the deepest and most profound respect for. And Henry's one of those people. He's the real thing. He is connected. He cares. And his accommodation with the character of the Fonz is one of the great Hollywood stories ever. You remember those days when ABC and the movie business was offering him millions to abandon the Fonz on Happy Days
mm-hmm.
and take off in a quote-unquote movie career, you know, go for the big time.
Right.
And Henry, now mind you, now this is a graduate of Yale Drama School and an educated man, he was able to resist it. He stuck with his buds, you know, on Happy Days.
Exactly.
And he maintained his dignity. Hey, he's in the Smithsonian, you know?
His jacket is, anyway.
Yes.
That's the kind of thing I think that people should be looking up to it. And it's interesting, you know, out of all the lists of some of the people we've had on this show, Drew Barrymore's happily married now with Tom Green. Todd Bridges had told us that he was off drugs and then he was arrested
and
again.
He is.
I guess he is now.
His life around completely.
Yeah, he's a really good guy. I like him a lot.
Yep.
Real nice kid. And Danny Bonaducci's in a few brushbacks, but seems to be doing quite well. Last time
he's
we talked to him,
very well. He's got a very popular morning drive to radio show. It's kind of, it's not the show I listen to, but I'm one of his biggest fans. I have to tell you, he is the most naturally funny person we have in the group. I'll tell you a funny story. With Lisa Loring, she had been thrown out of rehab and came to my house. I'd sent a ticket up to San Francisco, and I had her here at the house. It was 12:30 in the morning, and she, you know, she was a mess, and I made her take a shower, and she was sitting on one couch in this nightgown kind of a robe, a very sheer, see-through robe. And typical husband, I had not told my wife,
who
comes home from work about 12:45, and walks in the front door, and there's this very beautiful woman,
yes,
you know, for pretty much disrobed, sitting on a couch, and she put her hands on her hips and said, "You better be a kid actress." Now, I tell Dip Bonaducci this story, and he said, "You know what my Gretchen would have said? Gretchen would have said, you better be inflatable."
Lisa Loring, actually, who, of course, was Wednesday on the Addams Family, has grown up to be a beautiful, beautiful woman.
Oh, Geraldo Rivera said a wonderful line. Lisa Loring is easy on the eyes.
That's for sure.
Yep.
And
true.
I bet you she's real easy in a sheer nightgown.
You know, it's funny. I one of the struggles I have, and this is personal, is that I am often in the company of very beautiful women, and it is because they're just kid actresses to me, but it is often most peculiar, and people go, "Well, why are you having this lunch with these four beautiful women?" And well, first of all, they are all kid stars. You know, we're all in Trivial Pursuit, and I'm just trying to help.
And you have a wife who understands this.
Well, thank goodness she does. Mm. But remember, my wife is a show business nurse. She's a registered nurse who's been running the medical department at CBS for nearly 25 years. And when she goes to work, largely to take care of the accidents and injuries that occur on any major studio lot, she calls it adult daycare. So we are well suited to this task.
Mm. Now, I just want to remind folks out there that if you'd like to get involved in any way, or just check out the what Paul Peterson is doing, it is at minorcon, MinorCon.org on the internet.
That's
and,
right.
And you can check out the site.
I think people will be amazed at what we've been able to accomplish.
It is amazing, and it's wonderful to talk to you, Paul. I know we've spoken a few times on the internet, and you're a fascinating guy, and I'm glad to see you've grown up so well. I wanted to know, I didn't even ask about it, and
yes,
people have been emailing me, what was it like having Donna Reed as a mom and Carl Betts as dad?
Well, it was wonderful. I mean, you know, first of all, Donna Reed, remember, had already won her Academy Award. So there was no doubt she was a big Hollywood star.
Mm-hmm.
But she shared an Iowa birthright with my family. We were, in fact, my mom and dad were born in the adjacent county to her home county, which was Crawford County, Denison, Iowa. So we had a pretty potent ancestral background. And there was a part of Donna that a lot of people didn't see because she was such a star. She was a mom, she was a wonderful a woman, and just so full of courage. Think what it takes at age 18 to climb on a train. Now, mind you, we're talking 1938 now, 39, to climb on a train to come to Hollywood to be a star. That takes courage.
Mm.
And that same courage was the kind of courage she demonstrated as a co-chairman for, remember the Another Mother for Peace? She was co-chair of that.
Hmm.
And there's this wonderful story, and it's true. She actually buttonholed Henry Kissinger and pushed him up against the wall during the Vietnam War, because not only was I 1A in the draft and at risk, her son, Tony, who was about my age, was also subject to the draft.
Hmm.
And she, boy, if she decided she had something to say, she said it.
And what about Carl?
Well, Carl was, he was another kind of person entirely. Carl Betts graduated Carnegie and shared the Carnegie Award with the well-known novelist Robert Ludlum. He was a classically trained actor. Now, he wasn't the kind of man that you would think of as a man's man. He wasn't into fishing and football and stuff like that. He was an artist. And from Carl, I learned so many wonderful things because he was deeply sensitive and immensely creative. While we were doing the Donna Reed show, and mind you now, he's playing second banana, mm-hmm. and he accepted that so gracefully, I can hardly tell you how wonderful it was, whereas a Larry Hagman couldn't be graceful about his role before Dallas, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
But Carl would take on these incredibly complex stage plays, like Crap's Last Tape and The Zoo Story, and do shows in little tiny theaters while we were doing the Donna Reed show. And gosh, I got to watch him perform all over. His performance in The Crucible was just incredible. Hmm. So I got to appreciate the real skill of a classically trained actor. We would go to lunch. You'll love this story. Carl, on my 14th birthday, gave me the complete works of Shakespeare. And, you know, I was kind of, I'd talk about a real novice. I didn't understand about Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And over lunch, Carl would be having his pasta and the two beers he allowed himself each day. And he and I would do scenes from Shakespeare. Me with this enormous book on the table at Naples Restaurant, and Carl reciting the dialogue from memory.
Hmm.
Oh, it was wonderful.
But he wasn't the warmest kind of character, though, was he?
I'm sorry, he wasn't...
He wasn't the warmest kind of guy, though.
Well,
not like a Donna was.
You had to know, Carl and I shared two great affections. We both loved to drink, and we both loved cars. And we were connected up. I mean, I when I was young, I was, of course, the designated driver. But it, and as I got older, we really had a camaraderie that was great sport.
Well, I want to wish you lots of luck. And I don't have a copy of any of your books, but I understand you've got a ton of them out. And what's the latest one?
Well, the latest one is the It's a Wonderful Life trivia book that I wrote with my former Kid Star friend, Jimmy Hawkins. Jimmy Hawkins played tag on Annie Oakley for 6 years. But his claim to fame before that was he played Tommy in It's a Wonderful Life. And that book is always, it sells pretty well every Christmas, and I expect down the road here the next book I write will be The History of a Minor Consideration, because frankly, it's been a miracle.
And it's got a lot more to go, and a lot of things will be done before that book comes out.
Yes, indeed, because we're not finished. We are not going to go away.
Well, I will look forward to one of these days getting that copy of one of the books that you've written, and I look forward to the next time we speak. Maybe it'll be when you write that new book.
Great. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's Paul Peterson from the Donna Reed Show.